Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
If you've been a long-time listener of Air Talk, you've almost certainly heard one of the previous segments we've done about the proposed Centennial residential development in far north Los Angeles County. The development would be constructed by Tejon Ranch Company, which has done a number of developments, like the warehouses that are down in the Central Valley, just at the foot of where the five comes out at Grapevine. And this project would include close to 60,000 homes if Centennial is developed. There have been many years of environmental debate about it and wrangling between the parties. But last week, a Los Angeles Superior Court judge rejected LA County's approval of the developer's environmental impact report. So at least for now, that blocks this many years long project from actually being constructed. With us to talk about the judge's determination and what comes next is J.P. Rose, staff attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity. J.P., thank you very much for being with us. First of all, your thoughts on the judge rejecting what the county had apparently accepted.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on. Well, we're definitely very encouraged by the court's ruling. It recognizes that the county failed to account for the wildfire and the climate impacts of this proposed development. And Centennial is simply the wrong vision for LA County for a couple reasons. And one of those is the climate issue. It's located 65 miles from downtown LA and would lock in 75,000 long-term car trips per day, meaning residents would have multi-hour commutes to get to work, clogging up the I-5 freeway. Even the State Air Resources Board said this project was inconsistent with the state's climate goals. And the second major issue the court ruled in favor of the petitioners on is on the wildfire issue. The truth is, developments like Centennial would literally be built to burn. Between 1964 and 2015, there were 31 wildfires larger than 100 acres within 5 miles of the site, including four within the project's boundaries. And CAL FIRE has designated this place a high and very high fire hazard severity zone. And if you look at the fact that nearly all wildfires in California are caused by human sources, this development will lead to more wildfires and put residents and firefighters in harm's way.
Well, let's take, first of all, the car trips issue, because even since that environmental impact report has been created, we found that many more people are able to work from home than previously. And we've seen that home sales have dramatically increased in more remote locations because fewer people are going to have to commute. So in a case like this, wouldn't now there be substantially more people working from home, living in a place like Centennial, cutting down on what had been projected as the number of car trips?
I think it's possible, Larry, that that's correct, that there will be somewhat less trips. But if we're looking at, say, 60,000 long-term trips per day on the I-5 instead of like 75,000, we're still talking about a massive increase in traffic and greenhouse gas emissions. And then another thing that the development, as a condition of the development, it will require the construction of a new $830 million freeway. And this will be funded by, guess who? Us, the taxpayers. That's nearly $1 billion that could have gone into investments like education, public transit, healthcare, in existing communities. So I think most people would agree that subsidizing a Wall Street-backed corporation's development ideas is not a good use of scarce public resources.
Now, at the same time that obviously there's a push to develop infill housing in Los Angeles County because of the shortage of housing, that's not going to appease many people who are going to want to live and are willing to commute from distance and who are currently commuting from places like Corona and the high desert and elsewhere. So if the housing that's proposed for more urban Los Angeles County is not going to suit those individuals, they don't necessarily want to live in condos or apartment buildings, then why not a project like this that would allow people to have the more suburban sort of life that they're looking for?
I think you're right, Larry. Some people prefer that, and that's great, and there are those opportunities right now. But I think if we look at, you know, for instance, traffic patterns from Riverside or Santa Clarita, we have thousands and thousands of people trying to get to their jobs in central LA, commuting many hours per day, and this development is simply going to recreate and exacerbate those existing inequities in how jobs and housing are sited in our communities. The solution is to develop more in existing communities so people don't have to have these multi-hour commutes. There's things like duplexes, things like taking a look at single-family zoning in existing communities to help make that happen.
Also, you know, with some of the newer developments, like in the Santa Clarita Valley, I thought that they had figured out ways to mitigate the fire concerns pretty well by the way they had constructed those developments. And that, of course, is a very hilly area. Have you not seen anything with those more recent developments that seem to do a better job of protecting the houses that are built in areas like that?
Yeah, Larry. So I think there's a couple different issues to unpack there. There's first, like, the risk to the actual homes of wildfire, but then there's also how putting people in these previously undeveloped areas increases the risk of more wildfires. So I think what we've seen in some of the last few major wildfires, that even buildings that are built to current fire safety regulations, many of those still burned in recent fires. So building codes in and of themselves are not sufficient to protect people. But then the flip side is that when you add, say, 60,000 people to this remote area, you have more wildfires being started. And actually, I think something around 95% of all wildfires in California are actually caused by human sources. So you're going to have more wildfires on the landscape if we move forward with developments like Centennial.
We're talking with J.P. Rose, staff attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity. They're celebrating an L.A. Superior Court judge's decision last week that the environmental impact report prepared by Tejon Ranch Company, the developers, does not sufficiently deal with issues of fire risk to the Centennial Project of nearly 60,000 residents, if built, nor does it deal with carbon emissions from all the commuting that would take place from there as well. Love to hear from you, your thoughts about this, or if you have questions. We're at 866-893-KPECC. We reached out to the Tejon Ranch Company, who typically joined us in the past for these conversations about their Centennial Project. They declined to join us today. We also reached out to LA County Supervisor Catherine Barger to join us, and it's in her district, but she's not available to take part in the conversation. We'll see if we can do that in the days ahead. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Air Talk. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us as we talk about the uncertain future of the Centennial housing development. It's a planned community that's right up near the North Orange County line, right off of Interstate 5 as it goes through that very open area there. It would create a large community. Nearly 60,000 residents would be there. It's been years long in the process for Tejon Ranch Company to try and get Centennial built, and the company suffering a significant setback in court last week. Also with us from UC Berkeley, director of the climate program at the Center for Law, Energy, and Environment there, Ethan Elkind, who also leads the joint initiative from Berkeley and UCLA law schools on climate change and business research. Ethan Elkind, good to have you with us again. Ethan, you there? Okay, we'll try and get him back on. Again, we're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Are you back, Ethan?
Yes, I'm sorry about
that. That dreaded mute button, it tripped me up so many times.
I was going to say it's 2021 and it's still with the mute button here.
I know. I still don't have it down. Fortunately for AirTalk, the engineer controls it. So let's talk about what this means for other developments. I'm not aware of others in California of this size, but is this precedent setting?
Well, definitely. I think especially for projects like Centennial that are in these high fire zone areas that are far from jobs and services, located out in the peripheral areas of our major cities, this is definitely going to be an issue. And I think that's really what's kind of a landmark aspect of this case, because it's introducing some new challenges in terms of wildfires. The court specifically cited wildfire embers that blew miles away from fires and created new ignition sources in the Santa Rosa fire, for example, which happened a few years ago up in the wine country. And so it's introducing the new understanding we have about fire risk with these edge developments. And so now for projects that are going to be built in similar areas out in the periphery, they're going to have to account for this. And this is going to be a challenging thing. And then in addition, as you mentioned, and as JP mentioned, the transportation impacts, the greenhouse gas impacts, this development was relying on state programs like our cap and trade program, and basically saying we comply with greenhouse gas emissions because the state is already regulating this offsite. But the court said very clearly that it doesn't matter what's happening to your sort of offsite suppliers of electricity and other energy infrastructure, you need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions on site. And you can't simply take a pass by saying the state's already taken care of this. So that's also going to affect these edge developments, because as you were just talking about with JP, there's a lot of traffic that's going to be generated by this project, and those emissions have to be mitigated now.
So what are some potential ways, Ethan, that they could mitigate both the carbon emissions and the wildfire risk?
Well, I think starting with the carbon emissions, it's maybe a little more understood what they have to do. And that's basically, some of that is, as you mentioned, telecommuting and things like that. But it's also about fuel switching. They're going to have to figure out how to dramatically scale up zero emission vehicle usage from the development, so that when those vehicles are on the road, they're not burning petroleum-based fuels. Secondly, they're going to have to find a way to reduce the vehicle miles traveled from the residents in these areas. So that's going to mean maybe telecommuting, that's only going to be really a drop in the bucket in the grand scheme of things. You're going to have to figure out ways of trying to get more people to carpool, to set up transit systems, to try to reduce the overall driving miles. So that's understood, but very difficult in terms of how to actually do that. And then the second part on wildfire impacts, it's not totally clear to me, because they're talking about, well, okay, fine, you can make sure that residents in these areas are going to be protected from fires through vegetation management, home hardening, things like that. But the court is saying that's not enough. You also need to worry about how these embers that might be burning in this area are not going to be blown miles away and ignite a fire someplace off site. And I don't actually really know if we have good science and good mitigation measures, certainly not off the shelf measures, as to how they can address those impacts. I think that's going to be much more challenging for them.
Paul in Long Beach, you're on Air Talk.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. Thanks. Yeah, we my family bought a ranch up there near Gorman, just about 2 to 5 miles south of the proposed Centennial project. And over the course of the 60 years that we've owned it, and I now own it, we've lived through several of the fires. In fact, we helped fight some of them. And fortunately, they've come close to the ranch property, but they've never burned it totally. But that's always a big concern up in there. And when that area gets ignited, it does burn, and it burns very quickly. And it would be a big concern for the few residents that are up there.
So are you feel like it would be better to not have the development, or would you feel okay if they can come up with significant mitigation measures?
No, I don't think significant mitigation would be any mitigation at all, because the roads up there would probably turn into Topanga Canyon Boulevard and other big, heavily trafficked ones. And you know, on the weekends, people will want to get out, and they'll be moving around right into the national forest behind us. And I don't think there's really any. All it takes is one vehicle or one motorcycle or one cigarette to ignite the brush, and the whole the whole mountainside can go up really very quickly.
Paul, thank you for your call. I appreciate it very much. Let me go back to J.P. Rose, Center for Biological Diversity. So, J.P., what comes next for the developers?
Yeah, well, and just really quickly, I think Paul brings up a really important point that, you know, even if you build the new development to code, you're causing a risk to existing residents whose houses might not be built to current codes. And there's a huge problem with that. But I think in response to your question, I think Tejon has really an uphill battle. They have to convince the Board of Supervisors that building a new sprawling city on fire-prone wildlands is somehow in the interest of the public. In addition, the county adopted a sustainability plan, I think, last year that has new policies that oppose large-scale development in fire zones, developments exactly like Centennial. So Tejon has to convince the supervisors to ignore their own policies on wildfire. In addition, the political winds really are shifting here. A poll found that 3 out of 4 Californians favor limiting new development in fire-prone areas. Not to mention also the board's makeup has changed since Tejon's initial approval. And just to add to that, Tejon has really lost a lot of credibility. When they first lobbied the board to approve Centennial, they told a story about how they'd worked out a landmark agreement with other conservation groups, including Sierra Club, to set aside lots of the lands for conservation. Well, it just became public in December of last year that Tejon has allegedly reneged on its commitments in the agreement. The other groups, including Sierra Club, have been forced to sue Tejon to enforce the agreement. So I think our supervisors are less likely to reward a developer that fails to keep its promises.
All right. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. And again, to reiterate, we invited the Tejon Ranch Company, the developers of the proposed Centennial community of nearly 60,000 residents, to join us. And they declined taking part in today's program. J.P. Rose, staff attorney, Center for Biological Diversity. Ethan Elkind directs UC Berkeley's climate program at the Center for Law, Energy, and Environment. Boy, that hour went fast. We have a lot more to come in the second hour of Air Talk. We'll tell you about it in a moment.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.